All set.
Okay, I'm going to call tonight's meeting of the Laws and Rules and Government Services Committee to order. Do you mind taking attendance?
Absolutely. Chairwoman Bartels.
Here.
Deputy Chair Roberts.
Here.
Legislator Gavaris.
Present.
Legislator Heppner.
Here.
Legislator Ronk.
Present.
And Chairman Donaldson.
Aye.
You have 6 present, 0 absent.
Wow. Dave, are you actually, you're not, oh, that's an, okay, that's, you're tricking us with Vicky in the background. I'm like, wow, social distancing, physical distancing. Okay, I'll entertain a, I don't know if everyone's had a chance to look at the minutes that you put in, from March 16th. I'll entertain a motion to consider.
I'll move it.
Okay, do I have a second?
I did.
Okay. And Dave, any discussion on the minutes? Okay, all in favor of approving the March 16th minutes?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Moving on to resolutions. First resolution on the agenda is resolution number 7, adopting the Ulster County Code of Conduct. I'm going to request that we postpone that for another month, and hopefully Legislator Ronk and I can have the conversation about both this and ethics. I think just given all the everything else that's going on, it's probably appropriate to hold a big debate on it, unless there's anyone else that wants to discuss or...
I'll make that motion to postpone.
On the postponement, does anyone have any different thoughts on that? Okay, so all in favor of postponement?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Resolution number 100, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 2 of 2020, a local law establishing construction apprenticeship training requirements for certain construction contracts in excess of $350,000, and repealing local law number 2 of 2015, to be held on Tuesday, May 12, 2020 at 6:05. Do I have a motion?
I'll move it.
I'll second it for discussion, Madam Chair, and I'd like to talk about that for a minute.
Okay, absolutely. Legislator Ronk.
I'd like to respectfully request that we change the date of the public hearing to June 7th. I've had a conversation with the clerk who would rather we not have several public hearings the first time we try to do it over Zoom. So I think that changing the date to June 7th would be better for us and for our staff and for the public.
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor of that proposed amendment?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. On the resolution as amended, can I just first raise the question, and I had through the clerk reached out, but had the changes, I did not see marked changes per previous discussion. And the clerk that she spoke to you, Legislator Ronk, and that you and Deputy Executive Ryder were not looking to move that this month. So
I'd be happy to move forward with it with a couple of changes. I mean, I can talk about the changes out loud. The changes we've discussed already have been to remove design from the list of required, types of construction work, and to also eliminate paving and land clearing from the exceptions.
If anyone else has any comments, is there any reason not to postpone those changes till next month, since the public hearing is not going to be till June, and that way we can have a marked copy in front of us?
If you are going to postpone the whole thing, I think that's fine, but if you're passing this to move it to a public hearing, but just changing the public hearing date to the 7th, the reason the changes haven't been made is because I thought they were going to be made in this committee just on a motion from Legislator Ronk. So that's
We could do that, but I would have had the changes marked prior, which is why I reached out. I mean, and if it's not going to go to public hearing till June, is there any harm in postponing till next month and then us looking at it with the marked changes next
Absolutely
month?
Absolutely great point. I make a motion to postpone it.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. All right. So we'll have marked changes per your, what you just spoke about, Legislator Ron, for next month.
Yep.
Resolution number 168, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 4 of 2020, a local law establishing certain consumer protection practices in Ulster County and penalties for violating same, to be held on Tuesday, May 12th, 2020 at 6:15.
I'll move it.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. On the resolution.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make an amendment to the date to make it June 7th.
Okay. Do I have a second to the amendment?
I'll second that amendment.
Okay. And that was Legislator Heppner. All in favor of making the amendment to postpone the date to June 7th, per probably the previous discussion?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. On the resolution as amended, Chair Donaldson, or did you still?
I did want to speak on this.
Okay.
My concern is that the 10% I do not see as price gouging when sometimes things are changing in nature, and therefore a 10% increase would be called for. Price gouging is typically something much larger than 10%. Also, my problem here is the enforcement of this. You're having ways and means to the enforcement. Ways and means is what, made up of two people with 500?
Weights and measures.
Weights and measures? I meant, yeah, weights and measures. Ways and means, I said, yeah. Sorry about that. I was giving Lynn another job. Yeah, so Weights and Measures is made up of a couple of people, and they've got about a $500 budget to do things other than what they're doing right now. So, I mean, I don't see the enforcement of it, and I also had a problem with 10%. It just seems low for that of a price gouging. And my problem would be is if... you know, I understand there's things in there that allow you to charge more if your supplies cost more, but I don't want to see Kevin Roberts, when his shingles go up 35%, having to justify the idea that he's going to be charging more for that roof. When somebody brings him up saying, oh, well, he's charging 10% more. You know, I mean, I don't get the 10%.
Deputy Executive Ryder?
I'm good. Dave hit on the one point I was going to bring.
Tracy, I'd like to add on that if I can.
Okay, go ahead, Kevin, and then I have you, Jonathan, next.
The 10% doesn't make sense to me either. Just doing business day to day, prices go up and down 10%, and then to have a somebody, you know, wanting you to prove it, chances are if there's a fine, you're going to have to hire a lawyer for 10% to get involved in this. I think, and I don't want to, you know, I know we're going to postpone this, but I did have a call into Legislator Lopez to discuss maybe raising the 10% up to something more fair, 20-25%. And it may also, you want to be on a sliding scale. Anything over $10,000, maybe, you know, put it at 10%, anything maybe $100 or $10, make it 25%.
Legislator Heppner?
Yes, thank you. Mark, I just have a question to the executive's office. Were you saying, to Dave's point, you agree with both points in terms of enforcement and the 10% number, or were you saying, was it one or the other that you agreed to?
The only thing I was going to flag was the 10% question. You know, as far as weights and measures, that's one of John's departments. I don't know if he's on the call. I don't think he's a video participant. I don't want to speak. I mean, they are a department of two. I don't know how many calls that this will, you know, take them away from their other duties. But if it was a higher threshold, then potentially there would be less calls.
You should tell?
Yeah, just as a point of clarification, the 10%, it's not the gross transaction value at retail increasing by 10%, but it's that it is more than the increase at the wholesale price. So if someone's wholesale price goes up 20% and they pass that 20% on to the consumer, that wouldn't violate the resolution or the law as written, correct? Right. So essentially what this, my read on it, is that you can increase prices to reflect changes in the market, but you can't make your price increase more than 10% higher than your supplier's price increase.
Correct.
Yeah, no one else has something. I just want to jump in, if you don't mind, Dave. So I agree with most of what's been said. I think the 10% isn't really reflective of price gouging, and like Legislator Roberts said, I really see it, and having been certainly in a restaurant business, it's well within the price of doing business. And even though you wouldn't be held to account, you would have to still deal with the complaint, and our weights and measures would have to deal with the complaint, and you'd have to provide the proof. And then also, I think 10%, even beyond that, is not, it's just too low of a threshold. If we're dealing right now, there may be restaurants, I use this example to someone, there may be restaurants out there who are running alternative menus, and their prices may be 10% higher than they were before this pandemic, not because of supply chain, but because of attempting to stay in business, and it's a choice whether or not to go to those restaurants. So I think that the 10% is really not reflective of the spirit of price gouging. Price gouging is normally thought of as, you know, a 100% price increase. So I really hope that the sponsors are willing to look more closely at that. I also want to say we're focusing on that one aspect. You know, the rest of it, you know, are really great things that we haven't acknowledged. And I don't know that we have laws in place currently to protect against all the unfair practices. And so I think the rest of the legislation is very positive and a really good addition for our consumers in Ulster County. But I'm concerned about what will happen with this one aspect of it. I saw Legislator Donaldson.
No, I'm good.
Here. Okay. Anyone else? Oh, Legislator Ronk, you had your hand up too.
Yeah, thank you. I don't have a problem with, you know, the 10%. I'll tell you this, Tracy, a wise legislator once said that, you know, we do these things hoping that we won't have to enforce them, you know, like the styrofoam ban, the plastic bag ban, and things like that, where we have large fines that could be levied on businesses. In fact, we actually had to change the fines on the styrofoam ban because it was being used too much. This isn't going to be going after somebody who's selling a roll of toilet paper that used to be a dollar for $1.11. You know, this is for people who, at the very beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, were selling, you know, small vials of hand sanitizer for $50. Those are the people that are going to be, you know, violated for this law, not the guy selling toilet paper for $1.10. Or the restaurant, that has marked up their meal a little bit. The reason for weights and measures, I know that's been brought up a couple of times, is because most of the places where this is going to be enforced are places that weights and measures already goes to. Convenience stores, delis, grocery stores, they're already there, they already have those relationships. To me, it makes perfect sense to have that organization do the enforcement. If we want, again, the public hearing's not going to happen until, and I'm told that it's June 9th, not June 7th, that's my fault.
Yeah.
Would be the new date for the public hearing. I would be okay with postponing it. rather than having it defeated over a difference between 10% and 20%. I don't agree that price gouging is typically 1 or 200% of the cost of something. I think that you could price gouge a lot lower than that. And 10% on a vehicle or 10% on a large piece, you know, a large purchase like that, is a lot, you know, is a lot different than 10% on a roll of toilet paper or even a vial of hand sanitizer. So I think that everything's about perspective, and I would be comfortable moving forward on 10%, but if the will is to postpone, I understand.
Have Legislator Gavaris and then Chair Donaldson.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree with actually Legislator Roberts. He mentioned it before about having percentage is hard because when it's a small item, like you just mentioned, a roll of toilet paper, it needs to be a sliding scale. I think that's where you really will catch the people that are doing this for the purposes of gouging versus just a small increase. I like the intent of this. I just think that you're going to catch too much and the wrong things by having a percentage straight across. If you have thresholds like Kevin had mentioned earlier, I think you'll have a better law that will actually accomplish what we're looking to accomplish.
Chair Donaldson?
Yeah, the other problem with the 10% is many businesses, Ken, you actually mentioned somebody selling hand sanitizer for $50 a bottle. That's certainly not 10%. That's a real example of price gouging, without a doubt. The other aspect of the 10% is people may charge 10, maybe 15, 20% more on one item because they know they're going to be able to sell that item, and other items are not selling. They're sitting on their shelves and they're trying to stay afloat. So what they're going to do is try to make money on where they can make a few dollars. But with 10% it's just a problematic for me. So I can't see it as really working. And then if you brought up a car, believe me, they're not going to spend, they're not going to charge more than 10% on the car. They're going to be deducting money on the car because they're not selling. So, I think Legislator Roberts has a good point. Maybe the numbers on what the, making a scale different depending on the price of the items or the necessity of the items. I mean, the idea of people charging, $50 for hand sanitizer, I mean, that's absurd. Or maybe your mask, or turning around getting their mask and selling it for $100 when they paid 50 cents for them. I mean, that's clearly price gouging, and they shouldn't be brought up on it. But yeah, as you know, many times these things, somebody gets aggravated about something, they bring a charge against it, and then as Legislator Roberts also pointed out, you then have to defend yourself.
Legislator Ronk.
Rather than belabor this point, it sounds like there's a majority of the committee that wants to revisit the 10%. Pending, an agreement based on all of us on exactly how much we'd like our residents to get price gouged, I make a motion we postpone this until next month.
Before we do that, can we make a motion to amend the amendment to change it to June 9th, just so we have that to, okay?
Yep.
Can Legislator Ronk, do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor of amending the amendment to reflect the date of June 9th?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none? Okay. Now I have a motion to postpone the amendment from Legislator Ronk. The resolution, sorry. Do I have a second? Okay. All in favor of postponing the resolution?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Opposed? Hearing none. We'll be moving on. Okay. Resolution 169, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 5 of 2020, a local law amending Chapter 37 of the Code of the County of Ulster regarding automatic re-canvassing procedure in and for the County of Ulster, State of New York, to be held on Tuesday, May 12th,
2020, except 20.
I'll move it.
Second
it.
Okay. Discussion.
I'd like to propose an amendment that we change the public hearing date to June 9th.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. On the amended resolution. Discussion? No discussion.
I think it was something that we needed to do. I mean, the original law meant to assure us that we had recounts when the elections were close. And, you know, once we ran through that, Ashley did his main point and that we had to adjust this and A, put the resolution together with her, and I think this makes sense, so I will, like to move forward on it.
Okay, thank you, and thank you, Abe, for putting it in. Any other discussion on the resolution?
Yeah, I'll just say that, you know, this does not address every recommendation that came from the Board of Elections to, in response to kind of how things evolved at the during last year's election. But I felt it was important to avoid but adjusting any of the recount thresholds. So this keeps intact all of the thresholds. It just changes the opt-in and setting a timeline. So I just felt it was the right decision for our body not to go that far, to stop short of adjusting the thresholds for a recount.
Okay. Hearing no further discussion on the amended resolution. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. The resolution carries. And last on the regular agenda, late resolution number 172, implementing a voluntary separation program for eligible Ulster County employees. And second?
Second, I don't know who moved it.
Okay, Kent, Legislator Ronk and Chair Donaldson. We received late today, which is in the OneDrive if you haven't had a chance to look at it, a list of those employees, not by name but by position, that would be eligible for what is proposed. We have Bert Golnick on the phone, and of course Deputy Executive Ryder's here. I'll open the floor to discussion.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
For the most part, I mean, our role on this resolution is for lateness. The primary committee for this resolution is Ways and Means. That'll be tomorrow night. I feel like a lot of the substantive conversations on the dollars and cents, the positions and whatnot, should happen there, and we should restrict our comments predominantly to lateness, because that's why it's coming to us.
Are there any other comments then?
But
we can talk about it. It's fine to talk about it here. I think, to your point in terms of weighing in on more than that, but if anyone has any comments that they'd like to speak about.
Madam Chairwoman, if I may, just briefly.
Yes.
To the Deputy County Executive, did you guys happen to consult with our outside labor law counsel on this prior to submitting it? I'm just curious if we were able to get an opinion from them at all.
Regarding which aspect?
Just regarding any aspect of it, yeah, and review it.
So, I mean, one piece, I know there's been some concern about the way that some of the resolves were written. Specifically, I think the resolve that since the county executive desires to ensure that essential services, that resolved right there, I don't need to read the whole thing, that is identical to the resolve out of the 2012 voluntary separation that was done for Ulster County employees. We used that as a template. These were all basically identical clauses. And so I know there's some concern about whether that makes it voluntary, but I've talked to county attorney's office who uses employment counsel when they believe they need it. I'm not going to direct the county attorney to seek an outside opinion if he doesn't believe he needs to. And they feel really confident that this is legal and fine. I also took a look, and there's a question about whether Warren applied. Warren doesn't apply to local governments doing regular services, so the Warren notice would not apply to us in this instance.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Legislator Archer.
Yeah, I get what you're saying with regards to what may have happened in 12, but if the intent here is for, and these kinds of programs, it's about voluntary, meaning that people will feel good about saying, wow, this bridges the gap that I had before, and let's do it. The minute you start to make decisions, it really isn't voluntary. For good reason. You're making a decision because they're critical to the business. I caution you that not only I do think, and I'm kind of surprised, but just having done hundreds of these over the years, when you start to say something's voluntary, but then you're reserving the ability to not extend the enhancement to someone who could retire anyway, I think you are putting yourself in jeopardy. I think you're putting the county in jeopardy. And I feel strongly that you may want to get an opinion on this, because at the end of the day, you call something voluntary, but you're saying, but we'll make a decision who gets it and who doesn't. I think you put your whole project at risk.
Legislator Runk.
Thank you, Chairwoman. I don't agree with Legislator Archer's read on the situation, but just, we've got, 24 hours before our legislative meeting. Mark, any chance we can pay Bill Wallens $500 to tell us that we can do this?
I can reach out this evening, tomorrow morning, and we can see what they're willing to offer us. I just want to clarify that we are not going to use this clause to say to an individual person, you cannot retire or you can retire. It's the decision making in classes of employees. I mean, I had a long conversation about this afternoon with Sherry, and the reason this language was in 2012 and in today is that there may be situations where classes of employees are deemed to not be, we would not want to offer this to them, but this is not like I'm going to take an individual sitting in cubicle A and an individual sitting in cubicle B, and they're going to have a different, one's eligible and we say, you're okay, you can retire, and the other one, you can't. We're not planning on doing that.
It's a voluntary separation agreement. Voluntary meaning we're not forcing people to retire. It's not an automatic separation agreement. They're not automatically guaranteed to qualify for it.
Correct.
But if you... I'm sorry.
Okay.
As a follow-up...
Go ahead, Mr. Archer, then I have Chair Donaldson.
If you are setting up an eligibility criteria, are you telling me that you're going to set it up in a meaningful way so that individuals that... departments that you want to have the... ability to take advantage of this can, and those departments that are critical will not be made eligible? I'm trying to understand.
It's not going to be targeted like that, per se. But we will be, I mean, everybody who's eligible, we are going to look at, and you know, the department head will speak with the employees, gauge interest. If it comes back that there's too much interest at a certain class, etc., then we may have to look at and reevaluate the timing of it, various things, but I don't think we're going to deny anybody the retirement incentive based off of that. We just may need to look at a plan.
Chair Dunn.
And I believe well, these types of voluntary separations have been done in other places, other counties, other municipalities. It's a totally different thing than when it's being done in by a business or a company. you can do these, and for the protection of the welfare of the people, you can say that certain people cannot, you know, will not be able to take advantage of it. As long as I think Mark was pointing out, I mean, if it's two people in the same department and they got the same situation, and you offer one, you don't give it to the other one, then you would probably have problems. I don't think that's the intent here. The intent has to be the idea of, there has to be some flexibility. I'm not comfortable with that. I'm really not comfortable with so much with the idea of releasing or giving so much power to the executive on a situation like this, but it's the only way you can do it. It's a situation where you have to have some trust that they're going to do something that's not going to be underhanded. And as long as it's done out equally, I don't see a problem with it. It still is a voluntary separation. They still have to request that they want to do it. And then as long as it fits in our plan, they can do it. That's the way it has to go. And I don't see it. And the other problem is we really don't know how much time, we know how much time people have, but even that we don't always know because we don't know what they have from other, if they worked in another county or if they worked for the city of Kingston and they came into the county or the town. And we also don't necessarily know what their ages are. I guess you can look them up if you do the research. But at this point, we're trying to figure out trying to figure out who is going to request to be part of this voluntary separation. And then that's when you'll have to make the decisions on how to go forward with it. I think they have enough sense if they're not going to offer to one person in the department and not the other one under the same circumstance. They know very well that would probably bring a lawsuit. But I understand what Legislator Archer points out. I don't think it hurts to talk to your labor attorney, to make sure that everything is done properly. But I know it's been done like this many times before in many various other counties.
Legislator Archer, and then I have a comment.
Just a couple points of clarification, Mark. You had said that you're going to be looking at it, so are you going to break down some jobs will be eligible for this, some jobs will not, based on business need?
So I'll give you an example. The sheet, if you looked at the sheet at all that we sent this afternoon, I apologize for the late that it just went out, but you'll see that there's 11 people between corrections and lieutenants and corrections officers. If all 11 of those people took the incentive, I think we would have to evaluate whether one would really be able to operate the jail successfully by accepting those positions. So that's what that resolved is really intended for, is we have to kind of canvas. We know everybody on the sheet that we gave you are people who are eligible. We have to then canvas the list, and if there's major operational gaps by allowing this to move forward, we have to evaluate that and see if it makes sense to do that, or if we need to pull back a whole kind of group of people.
So just to follow up, say that you chose a group, there are six people in the group, it was determined that if all six were to take the package, that it would put the operation at risk, therefore you're not going to offer it to any of the six, is that what you're saying?
I think we would have to evaluate and make that determination when that time comes. I'm not going to say now that we're not going to offer it to all six. If we did the analysis and it makes sense to still do all six, but do it in a way where we allow two of them to leave in July, two of them to leave in September, two of them to leave in December, and we believe that we can have operational transition and it's still cheaper to say backfill one or two of those positions, even though we didn't really want to do that, but we're still going to save money, then I think that's all the type of thing you need to evaluate.
And One more follow-up, and then I'll be done. And will we then also get the list back that says, here's who we've offered the package to, here's who's accepted, here's the timing of their rollout, and here are the positions we need to backfill?
I would assume that there would be some sort of documentation that would work its way from personnel to the legislature throughout this process. Yes. I mean, I think you're going to need to know, for one, going into the 2021 budget, it's all, I would anticipate that there would be some kind of conversation documentation that goes between us and the legislature. Yes.
And a reconciliation, because even once they go, it's not just salary and what jobs you're backfilling and at what price point, but also what they get in their departure, which would be vacation time, you know, leftover sick days, etc., which gets paid out when they go to retire, correct?
Right, and I think you see that when a normal person retires, I believe.
Right.
You get a personnel report every month.
Yeah.
So, if I may, just for a moment, because I have a couple comments. Mark, when you talk about looking at a class and allowing them to take this in a phased approach, you know, I just want to be clear that everyone in this entire eligible class is eligible to retire, which means we can't stop them from retiring. We can only stop them from getting a benefit that we're offering to everyone else.
Yes.
So, therein lies my concern about the legality of this, or even the advisability of it, against the potential liability of it. Because if we're saying, here's this plan, and it's available to this class of people who are by December 30 eligible to retire by December 31st, and then we're saying, well, for whatever reason, you can't have this benefit that everyone else can, but they can still retire, but without the benefit. So I think that really does require some further investigation. I personally am also concerned about what appears to be the rolling nature of it. I would think that it would help us more in terms of budgeting to put out an offer that's thoughtful and that we've had discussion with the bargaining units over, and then have a timeline whereby people have to respond. It may be that we can allow the retirement after the time they respond, but we can plan in terms of a budget, at both for backfilling whatever we need and leaving vacant when we don't, and know how that's going to reflect on our budget. And Ken,
those are the steps that we're going to take as soon as this passes.
Say that again?
Those are the steps that we are going to take as soon as this passes. We are going to, again, canvass all eligible participants and say that you need to give us, you know, our first round hopefully will be essentially July 1st, maybe. We're hoping for that so that we can get a half a year in cash flow savings from the retirements. And so, you know, our goal is to put out letters to each of the eligible participants and find out whether they're willing to do this and have a deadline fairly quickly that they would have to respond by. But the idea is we don't want to not get folks because that has to happen so quickly. We want to then be able to offer this through December 31st.
Okay. And just, John, Legislator Gavaris, do you have your hand up? A virtual hand? Okay. So I wasn't sure. I thought you had a virtual hand, but I might have seen it from before. So the other issue that Legislator Ronk raised earlier, which I don't see Legislator Ronk right now, but was about us only being able to speak to this to lateness. This has already been cleared for lateness. You know, it got on the agenda because of lateness. So I do actually think it's appropriate to discuss, and there's well precedent in this committee. I mean, I've been critical of this committee weighing in on issues as it relates to local laws that are not late, that are on the agenda, but really we're only reviewing them for legal, but they have a primary committee. So again, I think it's appropriate for us to discuss, and I have timing concerns on this. Chairman Donaldson, go ahead.
Well, actually, anything that comes before this committee, you have the right to discuss whatever you wish to discuss with it. And I mean, that's part of it. I mean, we have to decide if it's legal, for one. I mean, that's something. So you could actually discuss it on that, and that's what people are discussing about, is the idea that it is it legal to do this? I mean, that's one part of the discussion. So I certainly think you have the right to make that discussion. That's what the laws and rules committees do.
Right. No, I agree. I was just making that point because Legislator Ronk earlier said that we're only discussing it regarding lateness, but that's not typical of this committee. So is there, on the topic, any other comments? I just speaking for myself, I personally, sorry, I'm being interrupted by a small person. Just speaking for myself, I personally would feel much more comfortable with the legal feedback on this. And I also would be more comfortable with an understanding of the timeline of the proposal and an analysis of this list in relation to the numbers of positions that from the executive's office would have to be backfilled. As you said, we got the list late, and I was able to, which I really appreciate that we got it, Deputy Executive Ryder, but as I looked through it, I noticed that there are at least several high management positions, and to your point, in the sheriff's office, a bunch of positions that I would expect would be being backfilled. Have you had the chance to speak to the sheriff about the eligible positions in his department or the DA?
I've spoken with the sheriff. I have not spoken with the DA. I think the DA has a handful, four assistant ADA, well, so four ADAs, a receptionist, and then a consumer advocate. The sheriff has been kind of asking for something similar, I believe, for a while, but he's okay. He wants, you know, he's concerned that we're not going to backfill the positions if he loses too many. So he has some concerns, but I think overall he's okay with the idea. We wouldn't push anything, you know, past him that he wasn't on board with. And just to answer your legal question, I have been texting with Clint, and he's going to try to get Bill Wallins to do something tomorrow, but I mean, understanding that it's a day, so.
Okay.
So we should have, I've asked to have something by Ways and Means tomorrow night.
Legislator Archer.
Yeah, I know at one point you talked about backfilling probably internally, and then, which may create another opening, so that would be helpful to understand where that creates a domino effect. Also, when you backfill, what salary point are you backfilling? And I think that's another thing that we probably want to take a look at that's going to impact the overall cost savings.
Yeah, I just don't know that anything like that is going to be able to be put into work at the initial resolution. So, I mean, we can't even canvass the employees and start get the ball rolling on this until this resolution passes. So I do think that if, you know, again, we'll have further communications on this program as the timing goes through, but I don't know that we're going to be able to get you those kind of numbers pre-passing of the resolution.
I get that, but then maybe we need to incorporate something in the resolution that creates a check and balance step during the process, and that we're not just looking at everything when everything's already decided and ready to roll. I think, you know, we may want to include something in there so that we do have a chance to review and understand the impact.
And if I may follow on what Lynn just said, with all due respect, Deputy Executive Ryder, I fail to see why we don't have that information. For each personnel position, there's a person attached to it. And to Chairman Donaldson's earlier point, we know that person's age. We know how many years they have until they're Medicare eligible. We know what the share is going to be because we know what we're currently paying, whether it's a family or not. We know whether they're critical. I mean, I don't necessarily, but you do when you look at the personnel and the person, our personnel director does, our executive does. So we know whether we're going to have to backfill if this person should choose to accept it. And so there may be some, you know, work involved, but I think we have a lot more information than we think. It's not that it just has to get approved to get the information. Getting approved, you'll get the information of who wants to take it, but we could run those expectations without knowing who's going to take it. We could run it against all, you know, a series of possibilities. And Bert, I don't know if Bert wants to speak to it at all or...
Tracy, I understand where you're coming from. The thing when it comes to even like the type of health insurance they have, you're kind of walking a fine line when it comes to HIPAA, because it could be a two-person, a single, or even a family plan. And to be honest with you, when you retire, you may not have a family plan, but a two-person plan. So the costs do change there, too. So you can have all kinds of variables just with one person.
And we don't know who is, I mean, I get that there's an educated guess on who's going to take it, but until we know who's going to take it, it's really hard to work in those savings and come up with that.
Legislator Archer?
Yeah, but you have the sense of, you know, if so-and-so were to take it, this job needs to be backfilled, this doesn't. When you put these plans together, I would assume that before you put in this resolution, you guys ran some numbers, you looked at your population, you have an understanding of the scope of it and the number of people. You were probably already gone through a process whereby you're already estimating who's going to take it, who isn't. You may need to fine-tune it with some of the managers. You may need to determine which jobs are most critical, which ones need to be backfilled. Who's going to back up? I believe there's more that has been done than is being shared. And I understand some of the reason why in an open forum. But I do think to get everybody comfortable with what is being proposed, it would be helpful to have, I don't know, even a small committee of some sort that would help, that would be reviewing these processes in each interim step so that there's a check and balance as we go through this. Because this is probably, I don't know how many people were in the last go around. How many people were eliminated in the last time you did this in, what, 2012?
Bert? To be honest with you, I'd have to go and look. But Legislator Archer, the one variable, I have six on this list from my own department. To be honest with you, I couldn't tell you if one person would take it or not. And the reason being is in the economic times we're in now, I don't know if their spouse has a job. I don't know if the spouse's 401k took a dive. I mean, to be honest with you, for them to retire, it's going to be a personal decision. And like I said, with the times we're living in now, I don't have an answer on the six within my own department. I know how many years they've served. I know their age. That's why they're on the list. But I don't know if they'll take it or not.
Well, and that may be, Bert. But in the end, it's still an educated guess at what you're doing, at who potentially could take it, and what the financial implication could potentially be.
But there's 213 people on here, and then there's also a lot of positions that are reimbursed. It would be a lot of work for some of them. They wouldn't retire.
Chair Donaldson?
I understand where Bert's coming from because I have actually seen this happen in a school district that I was in. They offered a separation and they offered a number of people a large stipulant, basically, a stipend to hit the road basically a year early, as long as they could, was not going to be penalized. And I was surprised with people that didn't take it. I mean, I ended up taking that separation, and they gave me a check to go. And then, but there was a number of people that I thought for sure would take it, You know, they were age, and, you know, the appropriate age, they certainly didn't need the money, and they could have actually didn't need to continue working, but they didn't take it. So you really don't know. Like Bert said, it's a personal decision. You know, personally for me, I felt like it was, I was ready to go. So I took it, but other people didn't, and I was really surprised.
What is the feeling of the committee? We have a lot of questions, both legal and otherwise. Do we want to move on this tonight, or is there a...
I'd like to move it. I think we need it to send it to Ways and Means, and I think it's, in my opinion, I understand there's going to be a lot of questions, and we need to continue to hold their feet to the fire, shall we say, in points, to make sure that it's being done in the way we expect it to be done. But... Unfortunately, there's an issue of trust that we have to have when somebody's going to be doing this. And I just think that they really have to take a look, because, like Bert said, it's a very personal decision. So it's really hard to determine who's going to go and who's not going to go. So I think we need to pass it on. We'll have the discussion again tomorrow night in Ways and Means.
Legislator Roberts?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think we should move on it tonight. Deputy County Exec Ryder did say it was time sensitive if they want to get some benefits starting July 1st. We also have to have trust in the county executive and his staff to get this done right, and hopefully it comes out right, and we'll all be happy in the end.
Legislator Guevara's Heppner, you have any comments or
concerns? No, I mean, I definitely understand the concerns that have been raised, but I am comfortable moving it forward. I hope that we definitely do, though, give ourselves enough time tomorrow evening to discuss this further, and I hope some of those concerns can be addressed. But just for the sake of moving forward, I will vote yes. And again, I think the trust level thing is important, but also, you know, it is a responsibility that the executive's office is putting upon themselves willingly. And I do have faith in their ability, but again, it's something that we have to be on top of. And I totally do, especially the point, you know, regarding, again, this is an incentive. These are all people eligible to retire. I don't know how you can say one person get that incentive and the other person can't, even though they both have the ability to retire if they want to. I still have, you know, that's one thing that's nagging at the back of my head, just making sure there's fairness in this policy. You know, to all the hardworking people that have obviously put so much time already into the county, you know, fairness is key for me in this, along with, not, you know, I wouldn't just use legality, but just also simple fairness, if we are putting such incentives out there. I am curious tomorrow to get more information and an opinion on that. So those are my comments.
Legislator Guevara's.
Yeah, I mean, Legislator Heppner just said exactly what I was thinking. I mean, there's a lot of unanswered questions. There's things, the labor for the union. I spoke with Deputy Executive Wright earlier, and I spoke my concern about the union's input. You know, they've had a chance to weigh in. I think, you know, like Heppner said, giving people, one person the opportunity to do this but not another because we need them seems a little unfair, to have something out there that doesn't give everybody the option to partake in it. So, and the savings, I just would love to know when your break-even points are going to be. I know some of those are hard to quantify without knowing who the people are, but this may not help us in 2021. This may not help until 2022, potentially. It's a lot of unanswered questions right now.
Chairman Donaldson, I have you, but I just want to ask Council Pascal, you had your hand, were you just waving it around, or did you want to be recognized? No response. Yeah. He looks like he's frozen.
It's a still. It's not really him.
Nick, did you want to be recognized?
I am here and I heard you.
For one moment, you were very, very still. With their
arms in Siberia meditating on the Northern
Okay, so Chair Donaldson.
I think, you know, people have to understand that everybody's circumstances is a little different. You may be able to retire. You're 62, shall we say, and you're able to retire, but you don't want to retire because, you know, you're going to be paying 50% of your insurance. That's why a lot of people will wait until they're Medicare eligible. Medicare, I'm right. But anyway, so as a result, you're not offering it. If somebody wants to go when they're 62 and take that somewhat of a loss, because you're not getting that, you know, because if they stayed 3 more years, shall we say, or say 4 more years, they can then get their full Social Security. They get, better benefits because they're now Medicare eligible. And so as a result, there's still a fairness with this. It's not like you're going to cut somebody off unless it's like they were pointing out. But I don't think they're looking to cut anybody off. I think they're going to be trying to get as many as you possibly can. And then the ones that need to be backfilled will have to be backfilled. I mean, but you might be able to backfill them with present employees. It's got to be, the flexibility has to be there in order for it to work. And I understand the questions, and we need to continue the questions because we really do still need to keep their feet to the fire to make sure that it's being done in a way that is going to save us money and be fair. And I think everybody's on that same page, but there's, like I said, a lot of people don't, you know, fear going at 62, but it's all of a sudden they can get something better, they may go.
Legislator, you should tell, did you have a raised hand? Okay, sorry, I see a lot of hand movements, but I realize everyone's doing things. Okay, Deputy Executive Ryder.
I do want to just talk about the union piece. You know, the county executive had a conversation with union leadership. And this was actually something that, you know, we were looking at, but this was floated, you know, when Pat brought up the situation that we're in and said, do you guys have any ideas? This was brought up by CSCA leadership as an example of something we could do. And I believe they're on board and that the full... we'll have full backing of the union membership because this is one of the things that we're trying to do to avoid being like Sullivan County where they just went straight to laying 77 people off. We're not going to be in good financial situation throughout this year and next. We're already seeing documents from the state where best case scenario is potentially 20 to 30% cuts in things like social services and other programs that we have. We're seeing a loss of sales tax revenue that we've talked about in the $36 million range. I mean, besides asking our department heads to reduce spending by 10%, this is a big part of the you know, how we're going to get to filling the revenue gap. And we're taking this very seriously. We want to do it in a fair manner. I don't think any of us want to really be doing this voluntary separation program because it means that we're not in a good situation, but I think it's our best way to move forward.
Okay, so on the resolution, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I'm gonna be opposed, but hopefully that'll change by tomorrow. I really feel I need to have the legal questions answered. I have a lot of other questions, but I need to have confidence that what we're proposing is legal. So I'll be a no. Okay. Old business? Anyone like to discuss anything? that for a while about old business. Okay. Any new business? All right. Then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. Legislator Roberts and Legislator Heppner, thank you all very much. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nice job.
Thank you. Good night.